You said you wanted to know how to get Capone. Do you really want to get him? You see what I'm saying? What are you prepared to do?
Everything within the law.
And then what are you prepared to do? If you open the ball on these people, Mr. Nash, you must be prepared to go all the way. Because they won't give up the fight until one of you is dead.
I want to get Capone. I don't know how to get him.
Want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. And that's how you get Capone.
Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we're discussing presidents in entertainment and the passing of Sir Sean Connery. Suck it, Trebek. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today is my fellow ho, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, how are you doing today?
You know what? We are actually recording this on election day night, and so people are going to listen to this. We don't want to know necessarily who the president is, maybe for a while, but I'm excited just to see what happens. How about you?
I'm getting ready to dig a bunker in my backyard.
No matter which way it goes, right?
No matter which way it goes. Like, it's going to be me and Trump behind that wall.
That's funny. Well, then you'll pay for it. Very cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm almost like Mexico. I'm like Mexico different, right?
Amanda won't be here this week. We don't do politics. Even though we're talking presidents and entertainment, we're trying to keep politics out of it. We're just talking about what we love about movies and TV, presidents, and also Sir Sean Connery. And Amanda won't be here. If you listen to last week's episode, you know that she has taken a week or two off. She will be back, though. So it's just John and I, which I don't know that the last time just you and I did a podcast. It's probably been
it's
Patreon.
It's been a really long time.
Yeah. So let's get into it. You know, this one's going to be a little short and sweet. We're not doing news or anything else because, honestly, we were going to take the entire week off because election night is like a Super Bowl for me. I don't like to miss any of it. And we always record on the same night. So it was... I don't want to be away from the TV for too long, but we felt like, you know what? Presidents and entertainment, that seems like a perfect topic for this week. And people want their mind off of whatever's going on with the election. So this way, you know, you can think about all the presidents you did love throughout history.
Before we get into that, there is one little news item I want to bring up that I thought you'd be interested in.
Well, I'm glad you're already like kicking the whole format to the curb. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. I mean,
if it's Justice League, I am not talking to you. I'm moving right past it. I don't want to talk about that anymore.
Okay, let me change my mind. No. So what I just read was something very interesting about the estate of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Okay.
Which is they've been trying to sue Netflix and the creators of Enola Holmes for that show being out or for that movie being out.
Yeah, and I believe Sherlock Holmes is free reign, right? That's why there's so many Sherlock Holmes things out there.
Yeah, as I understand it, yes. Actually, their case is being made on the fact that that show makes Sherlock Holmes very cuddly, which, I mean, it's Henry Cavill. How could you not want to make him cuddly? But
they do kind of make him a little friendlier. Definitely, he is not the character in the books.
Right. Which their argument is that he was only that character much, much later in Conan Doyle's stories. So the fact that, huh?
That's not true. I read every Arthur Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes book and story. And novella. And no, that's not true. Sherlock Holmes, that's the character.
I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I'm saying what they were saying was that he was cuddlier later on. So because he was cuddlier later on, they have a right to sue this property.
Okay. Fascinating. I didn't know that they were. I saw a byline about it and I just didn't read it because I was too caught up in election stuff this week, honestly. I really think they're stretching with that.
Well, on the other side of it, like, there's a lot of speculation that the reason why they do this, like, they constantly throw out these threaten to sue and do a lot of this other stuff just so that they can make money off of Sherlock Holmes still.
Yeah, because people will still settle with it. Because what happens is that I do believe it's out there in the ether, which means anybody can use the property and they're looking for any I believe. Now, granted, I did not read the story, so I don't have that information in front of me. But Enola Holmes had already cleared the rights, whatever needed to be done, because it was a book series before.
Right.
And so they're just trying to get some extra
public
cash.
Domain. That's the
public
that's
domain. Thank you. Look. Yes, it's in the public domain. Yeah. And they are just trying to get a few bucks because the estate wants that Sherlock Holmes money. Because if you look at all the properties, there's a lot of Sherlock Holmes money out there, and they're not getting as much of it as they would like. Which is to say, most of it.
Our great, 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 greater, and great grandpappy made this. We should keep on making money off of it.
Yeah. Somebody doesn't want to work. It's one of them. It's not fair, but it's accurate, right?
All right.
All right.
Back to the show. Well, I think that was enough.
No. I appreciate bringing that up and me completely being uninformed. That's what I love to be when I'm doing a podcast. Let's go to better British people. And by that, I mean one of the best.
He's Scottish.
You know what? He's Sir Sean Connery.
Yeah. Doesn't change the fact that he's Scottish.
I get that he's Scottish, but British people accept him as one of their own.
Yeah, but if it's not Scottish, it's crap.
Okay. Well, he's accepted by British. He's so awesome at being British, even though he's not British, they gave him the Sir. How about that?
He's part of the United Kingdom.
Yeah. To me, that's British. You know what? The Queen said, you're cool. I like you. Knight him. Give him a title. He took it. He's worth it. He's
all right, awesome. Chuckles, I tell you what, why don't you go to Scotland and why don't you tell some guy at Scotland, hey, are you British? And let's see what happens.
Okay, he's part of the United Kingdom. He's a sir. I understand he's Scottish. I'm just saying he was knighted. Can we agree he was knighted?
Yes, he was knighted. We're not going to agree in the fact that he was British because he was Scottish.
I understand. I'm just saying the British people, they want to claim Sean Connery is what I'm saying. They want that. Shut it. Where's Amanda when I need her?
Oh, she'd be totally on your side right now.
I know. That's why I need her here. You know what? Let's talk about Sean Connery. Sir Sean Connery. Scottish people don't have a knighting program, I don't believe.
Yes, they do.
Do they? Well, that's not who knighted him, though.
You can become a lord in Scotland by owning land.
I understand that, but I'm saying the queen put the sword on him.
Right. No, a knight and a lord are two different things.
People listening, you understand what I'm saying, right? I feel attacked is what happens here. Let's talk about Sir Sean Connery, the Scottish gentleman who's beloved by millions across the globe. How about that?
All right. I'll go with that.
He's knighted in all of our homes. I feel right. Like people listen to that. That was the longest way to get nowhere. But hey, that's what we do when it's just us two. I'm going to list off some of Sean Connery's accomplishments. Sir Thomas Sean Connery was born on August 25th, 1930, and served in the Royal Navy, as well as was into football and bodybuilding when he was younger. A Scottish actor, he began...
That's soccer, right?
There, yes. Yes, correct.
Yeah. Well, no, it's soccer here. It's football there.
I just can't with you anymore. I just can't. I just can't. You know what? We're moving on to presidents. No. Sean Connery is a Scottish actor, as we all know now, because John repeatedly explained this. But he began acting in the 1950s. You can remember Darby O'Gill and The Little People. But he first launched to fame. Yeah, it was a great movie. He first launched to fame as James Bond, 007, and Dr. No. And there were six additional James Bond films, if you count Never Say Never Again. Which, fun fact, I found this out. In the film, Sean Connery's wrist was broken by his stunt coordinator in Never Say Never Again. And that stunt coordinator, Mr. Steven Seagal.
Really?
Yep. True story. True story. Fun fact.
Wait, is Steven Seagal the Highlander?
I'm sure he thinks he is still. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. There can only be one sandwich.
It's pasta. His weakness is pasta.
Well, Sean Connery went on to break away from Bond in films like Marnie, It's Hard to Watch, and Robin and Marion, and then did a lot of ensembles and supporting roles in the 70s and 80s, including The Untouchables and Highlander, like John alluded to. Sean Connery won an Oscar for his role as an Irish cop in Chicago and went on to star as Indiana Jones's dad, Henry Jones Sr., in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Now, his career continued after that, and it was a box office resurgence. His films like The Hunt for Red October, which kicked off Jack Ryan, The Rock, Dragonheart, and Entrapment kept him on the A-list until he retired after A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in 2003. He also
you
won.
Say retired, I say hit list.
He also won American Film Institute's Lifetime Achievement Award in 2006. Sean Connery, he was a big deal. All right. I just kind of wanted to give some opening facts about Sean Connery, and John did everything he could to throw me off, but I got through. tell me your story. When and why did you first become a fan of Sean Connery?
You know, my earliest memory of enjoying Sean Connery actually happens from Robin and Marian, because I'm in single digits the first time I see it, and the whole time I'm thinking to myself, why is Robin Hood so old? But at the same time, I'm transfixed by this character who's playing Robin Hood, and I can't keep my eyes off of the whole story. And I really fell for it, even at such an early age, just because of the story and the way that an older person was able to get me to pay attention to a story that I already liked, but I would usually be like, ugh, it's an old person, but pass on. And then from there, it kind of went to, I made the connection in my brain of, wait a minute, that old guy in the Robin Hood movie, well, that's actually James Bond. And I had already been watching James Bond over and over and over again because my dad loved James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of like grew from there.
Yeah, I had to really think about it because as long as I can remember, I've been a fan of Sean Connery. As long as I can remember. So I had to really go back and hop in the old time machine and probably do some hypnosis to get back and find out what it was that really sparked it. And even though I've loved James Bond my whole life, I love James Bond. But I think I really did connect with him initially with The Untouchables. I was going through that whole, I'm a huge Hitchcock fan, have been since I was born, I believe. And Brian De Palma, as many people who are film aficionados know, wanted to be Hitchcock super bad. So every time he did a movie, I watched it simply for the fact that he emulated Hitchcock more than any other director, especially in the 80s. And when The Untouchables came out, I wanted to see it because it was a Brian De Palma film. Great film, loved it to death. But Sean Connery, because I had only really seen him at that point as Darby O'Gill and James Bond, really stood out to me like, wow, he is an actor. And I remember specifically, I didn't know he was so much of an actor at the time than he's just James Bond. Does that make sense? I mean, I really didn't know he had such range.
That's the Chicago way.
It's the Chicago way. And then, but I think I really connected with him. I liked him. I found him just fantastic in that film because he didn't look at all like the character I remembered him as. For one thing, he had far less hair. But then, I think it was a year or two later, he did Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And Indiana Jones is one of my favorite film characters of all time, still is. And he just, you know, he delivered in a certain kind of way where I was not close to my dad, especially. So the idea of Indiana Jones and his estranged relationship, I just really connected with that performance. And I really understood Indiana Jones's plight in that movie. And Sean Connery kind of created something that was warm to my heart because on a personal level. So after that, I just was obsessed with pretty much everything he did from that point. I watched a lot of his movies and some of them were not great. But he was always great.
You know, the thing that I find interesting about, especially his role as Dr. Jones, Indiana Jones's father, the thing you hit is that his range is definitely viewable when you go from The Untouchables to that. Because The Untouchables, he's this grizzled, badass old cop. And then you get to the character of Henry Jones and you're like, he's kind of meekish. He's he's definitely a scientist.
He's very bookish.
And he's kind of a goofball with his nerdy friends. And I think that's the only role you see him in where he's that kind of character. Cause the rest of them, like there's a great story about Sean Connery, about how he talked to everybody and like for The Rock, there's one point when,
where he got the money for the movie.
Yeah, there's one point for The Rock in which he owns the screen, and you understand why he owns the screen, because when he talks to everybody, he talks to him more or less the same way. Like, he is the boss of the room. So you have a guy like Michael Bay, which you've heard stories about what kind of director and person Michael Bay is, and then you have Sean Connery walk up to him and be like, hey, boy, why don't you go take care of this for me? And Michael Bay runs off and does it.
Feels right, because he commands that. And when they were running low on money, Michael Bay didn't have the clout at that time. And so Sean Connery actually arranged a meeting with the money men, and he got them to add money to the budget to finish the film the way that they wanted to do it.
Yeah. Like, that's a big deal.
He's a big deal. He made a lot of great movies. Like, people keep talking about Jack Ryan. You know what? The Hunt for Red October was a huge success, and Alec Baldwin did a fine job. But Sean Connery is who created the Jack Ryan franchise. Harrison Ford is the one who made it a franchise, but Sean Connery is the one who created it. Whether Alec Baldwin can have all the credit he'd like, but nobody remembers vividly Alec Baldwin's performance. They remember vividly Sean Connery's. The guy's a Russian, doesn't even sound Russian the entire movie, but
still. He sounds Scottish.
He really does. He sounds like he was knighted by the Queen. Yeah.
You know, and that's actually funny that you bring it up, because it should have been Alec Baldwin's movie, and by all rights that should have launched him into his career. But you know, he was like, I'm big shit Alec Baldwin, I'm gonna be able to ask for whatever I want. Yeah, after this movie
that didn't work out.
And when he tried, they were like, okay, well, we can go get somebody else. He's like, but I was the star of that movie. Did you see who you're acting against?
Yeah. Yeah. I really, really feel like he did not see the film, because yeah. as fine a performance, I thought he was a fine Jack Ryan, but they're sitting there in the studio going, okay, so we're going to spend that kind of money on this guy. I think we can get Harrison Ford and he'll probably do a little better. And it's fine. It's right. Really cool, that connection too, because you know, they come together and be father and son. I think they're like 11 years apart in age or something. It's they're not that far apart in age, but that's a cool connection between them. So why do you think he's seen by so many as this legendary actor?
Well, again, it's one of those things where it's something, he's one of those people who exudes being a movie star. When he walks in a room, he has command and presence. His voice is something that when you hear him speak, it kind of hits you in a certain way where you are equal parts, like dreamy and wistful, kind of aroused also in a weird way. He just has that ability, and he's just somebody who just carries himself in such a way that you know you have to pay attention to him. And he owns every single movie that he's in to every degree he possibly can, and he does it quite by accident.
And he can gargle an S like nobody's business. I'm Sean Connery. What I really put together in trying to decide why do so many people love him, here's what I came up with. He's the man I wanted to be. I mean, as soon as he's a man. You know, every perception I have of what a man should be, he is that guy. He's the father I wanted to have. He's the guy I wanted to hang out with. He's the man women wanted to mate with. He's like this perfect combination of looks, personality, and talent. By all accounts, and people behind the scenes and whatnot just said he was the same guy. Like, he just was that guy. And he was married for 45 years. He seems like a good man, led a good life, was respectful and honest and talented and just everything. Like, there's nothing I couldn't find a bad thing about. I'm sure there's something horrible somewhere, but I couldn't find anything. Everything, my experiences with Sean Connery, there's so many actors in Hollywood that have all these stories and they go up and down, you know, good and bad. There's nothing really with Sean Connery, just that he was a guy who didn't like to be James Bond. He really, really did not like being pigeonholed. He wanted to be seen as a serious actor, left that whole scene, and ended up doing ensemble work until he finally got the accolades that he deserved, and then he rebuilt his entire career. I mean, his career spanned 40, 50 years. It's phenomenal. And such the God, man I want him to
I,
be.
I keep on thinking about him in Highlander, because that's another one where he just
stole it.
Just stole a movie from the actual stars of the movie.
Yeah, stole it. I mean, has any Highlander movie been good since the first one?
No, because he was the heart of the first one.
Exactly. I mean, I think he did a cameo in the second one, the quickening or whatever, and that's the only part of the movie that was any good.
Yeah, they brought him, like, they found a way to bring him back because of space aliens. I don't know. It was weird.
Oh, he did, what was it, Zardoz? Or I don't remember, where he wore this basically Borat outfit. In full red?
Oh,
it was Zardoz or Zardoz. Or, I don't remember how he said it, but it was a really...
Something like that. It was weird because movie. He had like the super long hair and he had the red bikini on with the straps all over the place. And he had this laser gun. I was like, this is what the future is going to look like. I'm like, let's just not go there.
Let's just end it today. We don't need that.
I mean, he still looked great, but yeah, no, let's not do that.
So what are your favorite roles of his and any other memories that you have of his work that might have affected you?
You know, I, again, like his roles in like Goldfinger and From Russia with Love and, you know, Dr. No, those are all sit in my brain pretty well. And, you know, the idea of him being James Bond, he just carried that role in such a way that, though, you know, to some degree that they were trying to be a little bit campy about it, he added a gravitas to the role where no matter how campy they tried to be, he just made it normal.
Yeah, he did the opposite of Roger Moore. He refused to embrace it.
Right.
He's just like, no.
And it worked. I'm not that kind of person. But then again, you have another role, like The Medicine Man is something that I've gone back to so many times.
That's a really good film too.
Yeah.
Why do you go back to that one so much? I mean, it's a very unappreciated film, I think. It's one of his more low-key hits, but I thought it was a really good film. Why did you like it so much?
I like it for all the, it's like this dream of being able to cure cancer. I mean, that's always been something that's been close, or, you know, I've heard about in my family, but as with the exception of like my mother, I didn't see it, but it's something that would be great if it's like a fantasy idea of being able to get rid of cancer and the world would be awesome. And it came from ants. So great.
I still get sad when I watch The Untouchables and his death scene.
Oh my God.
It just hit me in the gut. The first time I saw it, and it's every single time I've watched it since, it just hits me every time. And, you know, he's so tough in that. And that's like the only moment of vulnerability he has is in his death. And I just find that to be a fantastic scene. The Rock is a movie where I think it's fun. It's zippy. It's action packed. Nick Cage is crazy bonkers. But if you don't have Sean Connery, that movie does not work at all. He gave that movie the gravitas that it needed.
Right. You know, I really love it. It's one of those things where it's a movie that can be campy, but because he's basically playing old man James Bond, mm-hmm. is what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
But because he's playing that old man James Bond, it takes every little bit of the stupidness of like the campiness that Michael Bay can put into everything and makes it so much more authentic. And it's just really great.
Yeah. And one movie, I do want to point to this, that Marnie, who I know you and I both know this film very well. It's Alfred Hitchcock film. And
yeah, it's my wife's favorite movie.
Yeah, it's his wife's favorite movie, which shocks me because Sean Connery is an absolute awful person. In my opinion, the character is in the movie. I mean, he basically just does everything to control this woman. Agree or disagree?
Agree. I agree. And then I've talked to my wife about it and I'm like, why do you love this so much? She's like, cause look how terrible he is. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Interesting stuff going on there at your home. But I will say what's fascinating, and it goes to what you said earlier about his gravitas and everything else. And what I'm saying with, he's that guy everybody wants to be, not in terms of that character, but because he's so good at being just himself, it's hard to not still root for him in some way, even when he's awful, which I think that's really the only role where I would say he was awful. And even though he's supposed to be the good guy, but I just, I'm like, maybe in the 60s, I don't see how that's possible in today's era, but sure. But because it was Sean Connery, you're still with him the whole time, even though you don't really like what the character's doing, which is hard to do.
Some may say that he found a way of telling Hitchcock's weird stories about gender roles and made it easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a fun story with Hitchcock. He actually asked for the script, and nobody ever asked Hitchcock for the script. He wanted to see the script before he would commit to it. And this is lore. I mean, you can assume it's true. I've seen multiple accounts that it's true. And they told him, sir, even Cary Grant does not get to see the script first. And he just said, I'm not Cary Grant. And that feels like a real Sean Connery thing to do.
Yeah, no, it's the right answer too. I'm not who you think I am, apparently. So, yeah.
Oh God. But in closing, this is really important to me because Sean Connery in many respects is partly how I mended my relationship with my father, which I didn't have a relationship at all until well after I was 17 years old. He wasn't around. And now we're very close. But I love James Bond. Like we couldn't connect on anything. We had nothing to connect with, right? I love certain movies. He didn't love the same kind of movies I love. Except for he loves Star Trek, which I'm not a Star Trek fan. I like the newer ones. That means I'm not a Star Trek fan, according to the rules. If you like the Abrams movies, apparently you're not a Star Trek fan. But I love James Bond, and my dad worshiped James Bond. So we actually connected with James Bond movies by watching the old Sean Connery movies, because that's his favorite Bond. It's my favorite Bond. So we would actually watch those. And ever since we reconnected on those, we have seen every James Bond movie together in a theater, which is just, to me, it's very special. I mean, to me, Sean Connery helped mend a relationship that I didn't think was mendable. So I'll always feel a different connection to him than I have most entertainers.
That's very sweet.
I wasn't trying to be sweet, but I'll go with it. I mean, just don't tell anybody. It's a secret.
I won't.
Appreciate it.
You're a dick.
All right, well, let's move on. We got to talk about presidents here in a second. But first, our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses come out of our own pockets. And Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. And we do some cool stuff on Patreon. We did debates recently on an episode. We do bad movie night sometimes. Our next Patreon episode is going to be a Cats commentary. None of us have seen Cats. We're going to watch it together live. Kind of like what we did with Sleepaway Camp. But I have no way to know what to expect with that.
It's going to be a lot of cat buttholes.
I'm probably going to wish that there were more. And you can sign up right now. You can get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And you can sign up. And we're giving away a copy of Spell. All you got to do is email us your name to spell@thehollywoodoutsider.com and spell@thehollywoodoutsider.com with the subject line, I'm under your spell. Now let's go into our From the Outside In topic, which is presidents and entertainment. Now the definition of presidential is of, relating to, or befitting a president or a president's authority. Do you remember when you first understood what being a presidential meant?
Only barely. And I think my best idea of what I thought a president should be like was back in the Reagan era, is when I used to see Reagan on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would look at Reagan and be like, that's a president, for whatever reason. Possibly because I was a kid and I knew that he was our president, but he also carried himself in a way that I can actually watch him and be like, oh, that's what a president could be like. And it wasn't until later that it started morphing because of ideas of certain TV character presidents who had like the ability of being much more stoic and much more an entity versus a person, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. Yeah, it does. I remember being a kid and watching all the President's Men. I really loved history as a kid and learning how shady Richard Nixon was. So I learned the opposite way of what being presidential should be, because, you know, that stuff wasn't taught in school. I mean, really, you just knew who the presidents were. They really didn't tell you anything about their character, at least when I went. And I started to look into what that position should entail from that point forward, because that whole movie was telling you, this is what you don't want to be as a president. And I do feel like Reagan always, and in terms of real presidents, always projected that strength for the most part, especially early on in his career as president, projected that strength and that resolve and that determination that you expect a president to have, that grit.
Right.
But also compassion. You know, I also felt like he was compassionate in many respects. Now, that could be, you know, a young kid's revisionist history. I don't know. I know that's how I saw it when I was young.
Well, you know, even if it is a revisionist history, it sounds like you didn't, you know, that's how you felt back then. And really, I mean, isn't that part of the job, is to sit there and carry over some sort of belief that everything's going to be okay?
Yeah. I mean, can we agree that the president's job, in my opinion, so I guess it's not really agreement until you say yes, but in my opinion, the president's job is, number one job is to calm the people and bring the people together in some fashion. Yeah. In terms of, if you're going through a crisis or you're going through whatever, bringing the country together and trying to mend fences and bring, that's probably a bad term in this particular junction, but you get what I'm saying. You know, trying to bring people together. Like, that's, when I think of what's being presidential, that's the first thing I would think of.
Absolutely. Somebody who can sit there and like get on top of a Jeep and use a bullhorn to talk about how it's not only the Independence Day of the United States, but of the entire world. Right.
Oh, man. And some of that could be not fair, but I want to hold that thought for a second. Did you learn that from watching actual presidents mostly, or for movies and TV, like what you eventually consider, what you now consider to be presidential. Do you get that more from entertainment, or do you get that more from actual presidents now that you look back on history?
The more I look back on history, I have to admit that a lot of what I think, especially lately, it seems like a lot of that what I think is presidential comes from my knowledge of television and
mine too.
You know,
yeah, mine too.
That it's sad in a way, or at least the juxtaposition of what my knowledge from television is versus what real life feels like. It's really kind of crazy. But pointing at something else, back in the 80s, there was a show called DC Follies. Did you ever watch that?
I did not. No.
It was a Fred Willard show. I think it was Fred Willard. And Fred Willard was maybe it's Fred Ward. But anyways, it's one of the Freds. And I'm thinking about this off the top of my head, so I didn't research it. But I remember watching this show as a kid. And I was so excited because it was essentially, you're gonna be like, this is the most John thing that John ever said. But it's Fred Ward being himself.
Fred Willard. It is Willard.
Fred Willard? Yep. Okay. So it's Fred Willard being himself at a bar in D.C. And it's the rest of the cast is puppets of presidents.
I remember that now. I do remember that. I didn't watch it, but I remember seeing commercials for it. It was on for like a couple of years, right?
Yeah, it was. It was a couple of years. It was the puppets that, like, if you remember that that Phil Collins song, the video for that Phil Collins, "This Is the World We Live."
Oh yeah, yeah, Land of Confusion. Land of Confusion.
Yeah, yep. Land of Confusion. So it's all puppets that look like that. So you got Reagan, you got everybody in there, and it's just. And I didn't always understand the jokes, but I did understand that they were trying to portray these real people with puppets, with real situations, like not really real situations, but playing on the idea of who they actually were. And yeah, Nixon would be coming in, and Nixon would be this cartoon character of a conniving psychopath. And, you know, Reagan would show up, and this kind of ruined Reagan a little bit for me, because whenever you saw Reagan come in, he'd always be a little doddering and confused. And, you know, Ford would walk in and immediately fall down. You know, it played off of everything that we like pop culture knows of presidents. And it was pretty great.
That's fantastic. I just remember seeing presidents on TV, and I feel like maybe that's not fair. You know, I mean, I do think maybe we expect too much from our presidents because of presidents and entertainment. Because I keep waiting for, and this is for every president. I haven't seen it happen yet, but I keep waiting for the Independence Day moment where they're just going to hop on their soapbox and bring us all together. I don't think it ever happens. I feel like in the real world, partisan politics have just ruined that cool moment we could all have. And I'm just waiting for the groundswelling music to kick in. And we're all just like, yeah, give me a bullhorn. I'll jump on that car too, brother. It never happens.
Well, you know, you had Reagan say, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall."
Yeah, that was great. That was great.
That was great. And though that's something that isn't necessarily designed to unite a people, but at the same time, it is. It does, because it is a great moment. I can't remember anything that Bill Clinton did. George Bush did this mission accomplished thing. George H.W. Bush did the whole let's go into Panama and drag out a dictator. Obama had, well,
Bin Laden. He had Bin Laden.
They got Bin Laden, which was a great moment. But it seems like from H.W. and Clinton on, I would say Clinton on, so more like W. Obama, and definitely Trump, what you get is whenever there can be one of those moments of, hey, let's get united, there's always some jackass that's going to stand up and be like, look how stupid he looks.
That's true.
And yeah. take the win completely out of it.
I will give credit where credit's due. I think Bush gave a nice speech after 9/11. So I will give him credit there. And a lot of people, I don't know, jumped all over him because he was reading with children at the time, and he continued to read with the children after he learned about that. I'm like, what are you wanting to do? Jump up and cause complete panic with a bunch of kids? I mean, I get it. He needed to escort himself out, but he also didn't want to traumatize a bunch of kids. I get it.
He did the right thing.
Yeah.
And you know what? And the thing that's funny is that I actually have a funny story about, do you have any idea how big Air Force One is?
Only from when I saw Gary Oldman get kicked off of it.
Oh, yeah. That's a great time. So Air Force One blacks out the sky if you're driving underneath it, and it fills up your entire windshield if you're like driving past the airport it's landing at. It is huge.
Did you have that happen? I assume with W coming into.
Yeah, when 9/11 happened the night before, I was coming home from school, which was my school, my trip from class to school goes right past the Sarasota to Bradenton Airport. And as I'm getting close to my turnoff, there's the path for the plane to land goes right over the main strip of road. That is a big ass plane. I have never been so like freaked out by something landing before, because all of a sudden that's all you can see in the sky.
Well, I mean, it's like a mini mall, essentially.
Yeah.
Because it's meant to be a control station if needed in the air. I mean, it's meant to be a command center.
Yeah, it's almost insane that the fact that the thing can fly, it's that big.
I know, right? It's like Midnight Run. These things can't fly. It's too big. These things go down. They can't go up.
You know, I've seen the C-130s. They do like touchdown practices at this airport sometimes. C-130s, which in my mind, you know, that's the airplane in Fast and the Furious, the one that has the longest freaking takeoff route ever.
Oh yeah, where they just continued to build runway just in case planes needed to land from all over the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So C-130, that's a big plane too. This thing is bigger than that. So.
Oh wow. That's exciting, man. Well, when it comes to entertainment, back to President's Entertainment, you know, I was gonna ask you like what was your favorite presidential speech in entertainment, but it's gotta be Independence Day, right? Is there really a debate with that?
No, there's no debate. The Independence Day one is one that I always like measure my presidents against. So yeah, it's a little unfair because Bill Pullman is amazing and he does. And like, and it's like such a real moment too, because he picks up the bullhorn and he's like, you know, excuse me. Oh, wait, let me just turn this on. Creak, you know, and then he goes through all the real human things that happen. So it's not like immediately it works and immediately he's able to give his speech, but he takes over the moment, and it is such a great and awesome scene.
It really is. And one thing that I found amazing was he is so great in that moment. He is never, and I love Bill Pullman. I think Ruthless People, he was fantastic in that. He has never in his career come close to that one moment. I mean, he's had a lot of great projects. He's done some cool stuff. I think Sinner's great too. He's a great actor. Nothing he has ever done has come close to the emotional components in that one scene. Would you agree with that? I mean, you get what I'm saying? That's like the best he's ever been.
I get what you're saying. I don't want to say it's the best he's ever been because he's in The Sinner and he's great in The Sinner.
He is. But I'm just, nobody's talking about that performance every 15 minutes. It
no,
feels like forever.
No. And like no one ever says like, oh, have you seen The Sinner when you think about cop shows? No one ever does that. But when they say, what's your favorite president? A lot of people will be like Bill Pullman and mm-hmm. Independence Day.
What's your favorite motivational speech? Oh, Bill Pullman's in Independence Day. What's your best just random speech? Bill Pullman and Independence Day.
Independence Day. Do you like any monologues? Yeah, Bill Pullman, Independence Day.
Right. Like it's always there, and it just, I think it's really cool that an actor who's got a good solid body of work, but he has one defining moment of his entire career. I think that's pretty fantastic. A lot of actors never get that, so that's pretty fantastic.
It does really feel like Bill Pullman had that moment, and then he realized, he's like, well, this is it. This is, let me go do Lake Placid now.
See, I've got an argument about that speech, but I'll wait until we get to listener picks or our top three in case it, you know, pops up in your top three. But I'll hold that thought. But I've got an argument about his president, but I want to hold off on that.
Okay.
All right. First, before we get to who our favorite presidents have been in entertainment, we've got a couple fun games we want to play. And these were actually suggested by former Hollywood Outsider host Brian Williams. He suggested these. So we're going to try to have some a little bit of fun with both movie and TV presidents and real ones. So this should be interesting. So here we go. Here's the first game. Best movie or TV president to handle the following movie situations, okay? A 2012 situation. That means, you know, the world's coming to an end, essentially. Who's the best movie or TV president to handle that situation to you?
I'm about to go David Palmer from 24.
Okay, why?
Well, if I remember David Palmer from 24 very, very clearly, the guy always had a clear and concise plan of what he wanted to do. He always had an idea of how to do it, and he always was able to carry himself, even like when people tried to kill him, he carried himself with amount of self-respect and ability to be able to transfer that to the people convincingly.
Okay. Absolutely fair. I think that's fair. I would say that absolutely good pick. I would pick President Rosalyn for Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Because she's calm in a sea of crazy. I mean, in that entire show, everything's falling apart the entire show, and she always keeps her calm. And I think that would be helpful in a situation such as 2012, where everybody's losing their damn mind. Now, the next situation, a World War Z situation. Zombies have decided to run and destroy the world. They can run up walls. It doesn't matter who built them. They're just coming at you, fast and furious. Who's your best president?
I'm choosing this president because it's the worst president for the job.
Okay.
I'm just going to be honest. And that's President Charles Logan, also from 24.
The idiot?
The idiot president? Like, the worst president. I want to say he's the worst president in the history of entertainment presidents, but I can't because there's at least one other one that I can think, like Jack Nicholson from Mars Attacks. Mars Attacks, yeah, was pretty bad too. But Charles Logan was just such a smarmy, craptastic president that I just want to see him get eaten by zombies.
You know what? I get that. I like that you're willing to doom the world by picking an idiot you want to get eaten. I respect that. My pick would be Frank Underwood from House of Cards, because I think we would need somebody willing to make the hard choices. And if you know what I mean by hard choices, I guess we're going to have to lose that city. You know, that kind of thing. Frank Underwood's that right guy.
Okay.
Now, the last one is a Red Dawn situation, which means North Korea or whoever is dive bombing parachuters into the country, and they're taking over the country as a whole. Who's your best president?
Ooh, that's a good one. You know what? It's I'm going to have to go with Harrison Ford, President James Marshall, Air Force One.
That's a great pick.
Because at the very least, if he's going to get his ass handed to him, he'll at least fight back himself.
It's true. He's not a coward.
Right.
Not a coward. I picked President Kirkman from Designated Survivor. I don't know if you ever watched it. Kiefer Sutherland from Designated Survivor. He tackled insurmountable odds over and over and over in that show. And I feel like he would be a good presence. Plus, secretly, he's always Jack Bauer, you know?
Yeah. All right.
All right. Now we get to have uncomfortable fun. See, now we're going to offend someone at some point, and I hope you're ready. You know, I'm going to give it my best go. Substitute a real life president for any role in the following movies. We've got 1, 2, 3. We got five or six movies. We're going to substitute a real life president for any role in these movies. Okay. The first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
All right. So I'm going to go easy on this. So my very first one for Raiders of the Lost Ark is going to be Trump as Indiana Jones.
What?
Yes.
How does that work?
Not convincingly.
Jesus.
But, you know, he's going to walk in. He's going to be all like, hey, I got this. I can do this. And I can see him, like, you know, just kind of like, you know, do that head bob, like look at the idol sitting there and try to think about weighing him, like the sand out. And I can just see the whole thing play out. It'll be funny.
Okay. So you're going for a comedy. I actually took this seriously, sir. I also cast Trump in this film, which, don't worry, it's not going to be Trump and everything, but this fits as Belloc, because Belloc, he takes the wins of others. He kind of plays a smart game there, really. He never has to do all the work. Other guy does all the work. He gets all the spoils. I think that fits. I could see it.
Okay.
That's where I'm at. Now, the next one, 50 Shades of Grey.
Wait, just to be clear, you cast him as a villain in that, right?
See, I don't consider Belloc really the villain. He's more like the adversary.
Okay.
Because if you think Belloc...
That's some interesting wordplay.
Belloc is... He's basically someone else is always bringing him shit. He's winning in many ways. And you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you got to delegate, is what I'm telling you.
All right. I'm just fascinated by your wordplay. I'm very astounded, like, and I'm very, like, impressed by it.
All right. 50 Shades of Grey. Real president, 50 Shades of Grey.
Bill Clinton,
right? It has to be.
Has to be. I can't see anybody else, Bill Clinton, in that role.
He's Christian Grey. I mean, he was Christian Grey. Same dude. I bet you had that closet.
Yeah.
All right. Pulp Fiction.
Ooh, this one's going to be a little bit more interesting because I want to see Reagan as John Travolta's character.
I could actually see that. Yeah, that could work.
Yeah.
If his career went a different way, you never know.
You never know. You know, he could do the whole, like, do you know what they used to call a quarter pounder with cheese?
I forgot. Angie, I forgot.
Oh, I forgot already.
Good one. I picked Abraham Lincoln as Butch Coolidge because he also wouldn't let Marcellus Wallace suffer that fate.
Okay.
Think about it.
All right.
No, I thought that was clever. And apparently the only one. Okay. Abraham Lincoln, vampire killer. How about that? Is that better? No, I'm just kidding. All right. This one's real. This is legit. Brokeback Mountain. You get two presidents.
Oh, boy. You know, it'd be kind of cute.
Hmm.
It would be Obama and W.
That's what I've got. Have you seen those two together? They're basically bros.
Yeah, they kind of are, aren't they? At the very least, like, Michelle loves W. The two of them always seat buddies sharing candy back and forth.
That's fantastic. I wonder how many people have already turned this episode off because we mentioned people that drive, that trigger them. I can't do it anymore. But yeah. I would watch that movie too, honestly. I want to see that romance.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last one, Titanic.
Jimmy Carter's Jack.
Just because you know he would, oh yeah, you can have the raft. I'm too dumb for that.
Yeah, you know, I'm just a poor peanut farmer. No big deal.
I had actually cast Reagan as Jack and Nancy as Rose. I could see that.
Yeah, I could see that.
All right, fun games. I hope you guys haven't been triggered away. All right, so your top three presidents in entertainment all time, movies or TV, either one. Your top three. You can do them all at once, but we don't need that. Go around.
My top three, David Palmer from 24.
Okay, you already explained that one, I think, but...
Right, sure. Thomas J. Whitmore from ID4, which I already explained that, too.
Bill Pullman, yep.
Well, you know, and the thing is like, the reason why I like him so much as a president is because, especially in 24, he's, like, he has that great, very presidential moment, but a lot of times...
Wait, which
like,
one are you talking about? Because you went to Bill Pullman, and now you're back to 24. Are you talking about David Palmer here?
I'm sorry. I meant Bill Pullman.
Okay.
All right. So, I mean, ID4, Bill Pullman's character, I like him a lot because he seems like a very human person when he needs to be a human person. And there's even that little backstory about how... Jeff Goldblum thought his wife was cheating with the president kind of thing. And yeah. He punched the president, you know, and I thought that was all kind of great. Although if it was a real story, they were actually cheating, but that's neither here nor there. But again, just real president, a real person. And he was able to balance both those characters out because being a president is kind of like playing a character. And then being a person is letting yourself be yourself kind of thing.
Okay. Now, here's my time for my argument against why he's not on my list, right? I said I would bring that up, and I'm not trying to poo-poo your list. I just knew he would be somewhere here.
That's fine. You can yoke my yum. That's fine.
I don't think he was a great president. I think he gave a fantastic, one of the best speeches in history. I don't think he was a great president. When the aliens first showed up, he barely even had a defensive plan. I mean, yeah, he wants to make sure that they're safe, but he had no strategy for exit. No plan strategy. And then, at the end of the movie... When the whole world is hanging in the balance, he puts he's the president of the United States, and he put himself completely in harm's way, which, yes, brave and honorable and all that jive, but you're the president. You don't get to make that call. You don't get to sacrifice right. yourself and put the nation at risk because you want to go play Wile E. Coyote. You just can't do it. And that's where I felt, as a president, he made a bad call.
Okay. I mean, I can get behind it. I understand it. I'm still going to keep him on my list.
Absolutely. It's your list.
Yeah. But I understand. I understand, and there's a lot of me that agrees with everything you're saying.
All right. What's your number one?
My number one is going to be Harrison Ford's James Marshall from Air Force One, because get off my plane.
Such a great moment. That's the kind of president I think we all want. Like, one that's just going to kick everybody's ass on his own.
He does it badly, but he can do it.
He only does it really at the end. Otherwise, he kind of screws it up. And basically, they have every opportunity to kill everybody on that plane, mostly because of him.
Right.
But it's Harrison Ford, so you know he's going to live.
Right.
good list. That was a very good list. Very good list.
Thank you. Well, what about your list?
Well, if JFK was alive, I would put JFK on the list because I love that movie. Is that wrong that I want to put it on there, but I can't because, you know, the whole movie's about his assassination. But I was like, I was obsessed with the JFK assassination. I took a college class on it. If you can believe that, on the whole Zapruder film and, you know, all the different elements. I could talk about this forever. I probably shouldn't. So number three, am I the only one? You're not really, you didn't like that movie?
I love that movie, and I'll watch that movie till the cows come home. It's just so rewatchable and on every aspect of it. And then the idea of the history that gets played out, and it's not one of those things that is accurate by a lot of measures, but
it's basically like low rent QAnon.
right. Well, maybe it's high rent QAnon.
So many conspiracy theories in that thing. I really think there was a dartboard somewhere, and he's like, all right, let's make sure every single possibility hits this movie. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's bring up all the conspiracies. I want the guy on the grassy knoll. I want the mob. I want CIA people. I want everything in here.
All right. My top three. James Marshall, Air Force One. Very similar. A lot of it is because Harrison Ford is just someone I've always looked up to as an actor, as a celebrity, as a character. I mean, he's pretty much the same guy in every movie. And I love that guy. So that's why. Number two, President Palmer, David Palmer, 24. He just, to me, exuded what I thought a president should be for the majority of the series. He was just strong and had grace and listened to people that had a differing opinion than he did. You know, a lot of why I love his character is because he would listen to Jack, even though everyone around him told him he shouldn't. He was willing to listen to someone who had more information than anybody in that room. And I always respect when anyone does that, not just a president, but anyone is willing to listen to something that it goes against what they believe. And that's what David Palmer would do consistently. Number one, Abraham Lincoln Vampire. I'm kidding. That's not it. My number one is President Jackson Evans from The Contender. I absolutely love Jeff Bridges' performance in The Contender. I know a lot of people have never seen that movie. Basically, it's about he's picking a new VP candidate. He picks Lane Hansen, and she'd be the first woman vice president to be nominated. And a lot of the film is him trying to get this character through Gary Oldman, of course. Gary Oldman, just the guy who's always an asshole to presidents. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to keep her out, basically, because he finds her being a female offensive is a big portion of it. And this movie's about 20 years old, I think, something like that. But his president is so wonderful. And he has this speech at the end that I would personally say rivals Bill Pullman's. And I just want to paraphrase a couple of it. One line that he says, "We're greatness. It comes in many forms. Sometimes it comes in the form of sacrifice, the loneliest form." And he delivers that brilliantly. But what one portion that he says, and I'm going to repeat it, I'm not going to give it as much as he did, not as talented or powerful as Jeff Bridges is. I definitely am not. The section of his monologue says, "You can come at us with whatever weapons you have in your arsenal, but there is no arsenal as powerful as that of an idea whose time has come. I cannot accept Senator Hansen's withdrawal. I will not be deterred by partisanship. I will not be deterred by misogyny. I will not be deterred by hate. You have now come face to face with my will." And that is one of the most powerful moments from a president I have seen on film. It wrecked me in many ways. It just struck a chord with me, because that's what I want a president to be. Someone who always stands up for what's right. Never, ever bows to wrong.
Right.
That's something that I just found powerful. Did you see that film?
No, that one escaped me.
You should watch that. You should watch that with your wife. I know her taste, and I think she would love it. She would love it.
I'm sure she will.
Yeah. So, bam. There we go. Anything that surprised you that wasn't on either one of our lists, by the way, as I bring up the listener list?
No, not really. I think our lists play to our personalities very well. So, nothing really surprises me too much about it. I'm a little disappointed we can't talk about presidents that we think are terrible. Like, I found a way to do it.
Yeah, who do you think is terrible? Who do you think is terrible?
Like, one of the worst presidents in entertainment history is also, and I mentioned the other two, but the other one is Tony Goodwin's Fitzgerald Grant from Scandal.
Oh, yeah. Like, doesn't he, I mean, he has an affair the whole time in the show, and he's kind of, why is he terrible? I'm sorry. I don't know the show as well as you do.
Like there, well, there's a whole, the whole thing where he's constantly having affairs. Like the, all you see him do as a president is basically screw around behind his wife's back, you know, dodge an assassination attempt. You know, it, you don't actually ever see him do something that's presidential. And the thing is that he always acts like somebody who should be treated differently because he's the president. It's kind of frustrating and annoying. It's really what turned me off to the show, because it's like, oh my God, can we just stop banging this dude? I mean, every time, can we just stop it?
If I had to pick terrible, I'd probably go President Merkin Muffley from Dr. Strangelove. I just don't like him. But really, it's just because I'm not a big fan of, you know, the director, Kubrick. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. I'm trying not to go on a tirade. So here we go. Listener picks 10 to 1. And I got to tell you, 10 is a 3-way tie. So technically you're getting like 12. What do you want me to tell you? All right. So tied for 10th, President Camacho from Idiocracy. Fair. President, this is from our listener poll on Facebook. President Frank Underwood, House of Cards. I wonder if that would be higher if.
If it wasn't who it was.
Yeah, if it wasn't who shall not be named. Yep.
Right.
President Tom Beck from... Oh, no, yeah. President Camacho. President Asher from Olympus and London Has Fallen. So, Aaron Eckhart.
Eckhart. Yeah.
I don't think he's a very good president. I mean, basically, he's just... Apparently, everybody hates him. They're always trying to blow him up.
Well, on the flip side of it, though, you know, they're always trying to blow him up because it means he must be doing something right.
Fair enough. All right, the rest of the top 10. President Tom Beck from Deep Impact. Okay.
Okay.
President Kirkman from Designated Survivor. That's cool that he made the list. I mean, that's a newer show. President Marshall from Air Force One. President Laura Roslin from Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
President Andrew Shepard from The American President. That's Michael Douglas. Excellent.
Yeah.
President Mitchell from Dave. Now, that's...
Yes!
That's, I have a question about that because that's Kevin Klein. Wasn't President Mitchell, the actual President Mitchell, kind of a jackass? Dave was the better guy, right?
Yeah, President Mitchell was dead, though.
So shouldn't it be President Dave that we're rooting for in this one?
Right. Technically, it's like, you know, he brings in his friend who's an accountant and be like, why are we paying him this much money for a hammer?
That's a great movie, by the way.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised it wasn't on your list because you talk about Dave all the time.
I'm surprised it wasn't also, but, I, you know, as much as like... I think I'm gravitating more to what I want as far as my list was concerned, what I want in my president versus what I like in my president, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Eek, eek, eek. It makes sense. Okay. Where are we at? President Dave, President Palmer, 24, number 3. Number 2, President Bartlett, The West Wing. Now, we should stop because neither one of us mentioned President Bartlett. I can tell you why. I have seen the show. I like the show. I love Aaron Sorkin. I never could get through the show. To me, it was too many episodes. It wasn't as compelling for me as it was for many people. I concede he's a great president. He just wasn't great enough to make my list. What about you?
Right. I maybe watched the show a handful of times and it never really did anything for me. And, you know, but at the same time, it's hard to avoid the fact that the cultural impact of that show is far and wide, and there's still a lot of people who talk about entertainment, talk about television entertainment and television presidents who will say that he is one of the best presidents on television.
Absolutely. And so I concede. He didn't make my list. Doesn't mean that it's not accurate.
Right.
And number 1, President Whitmore, Independence Day. Dun, dun, dun.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Woo. That's it for our president talk. Any recommendations you have before we move on?
Yeah, I actually have 2. So over the weekend, I was able to sit down and watch a couple of things that I really liked. One of them on Amazon Prime. I know you watched this, Aaron. The Lie.
Oh, man. That will get you at the end, right?
Oh, my God.
It's worth it. Watch. Worth a watch. Definitely.
It really is. As far as like the backstory, well, the story itself, it's a story about these parents who come together to protect their daughter who has done something pretty bad. And... the turns and that you take with this whole thing, it's pretty impressive. And I adore this movie. I want to sit down and watch it again. because of just how much the story affected me. So it was really great, really suspenseful. It's a really fun movie. And yeah, I do highly suggest it.
What was your other one?
We got started watching this show called No Offense, and it's on the Acorn version of Prime. So you it's a service that picks up a lot of the British TV shows, and that's what this is. You pay $5.99 a month for it if you want to pay for it. But I think if you start it off, you get a free week or a free month trial with it. Mm-hmm. And so the show No Offense is, if I were to give you the elevator pitch, it is Law & Order SVU with likable characters. And it's great. It's very charming, very fun. The music is easy to get into. The stories are easy to understand and have fun with. And then, but it also has a nice serious streak to it that like SVU does, but it just knows how to balance the seriousness with characters that are real people and not these ultra, I don't know what you want to call those people, like, you know, on SVU, but every single one of them has some sort of banner they're carrying for some political cause. Okay. This doesn't have that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So it's basically like a comedy version of SVU or a friendlier version?
No, it's not necessarily comedy. It's very much a serious show, but the characters are just so much more charming and so much more engaging and so much more well-rounded. So when there's seriousness, they're really good at being serious. When it's time to have fun, they know how to have fun. And they really know how to just suck you in to these characters that are just well-rounded out people. They're not just people who are like, I'm a bleeding heart person and this, I'm going to protect all these people with all. It's not that at all. It's very much layers of people with their own stories and backgrounds, and it's very charming. I know I say that a lot as far as the show is concerned, but I'm trying to just drive the point home that it's charming.
Absolutely. Two things. Mandalorian's back. One of my favorite actors is in the season premiere of season 2. If you haven't started watching the new season yet, it really made my day. It just made me smile from ear to ear just because he's in it. Didn't really matter to me what happened in the episode. Just him being there was great. And the Queen's Gambit, I talked about it on our fall TV preview that I was really excited about it. It is just as good of a show as I was hoping. It's on Netflix. It stars Anya Taylor-Joy as Beth Harmon, who's a chess prodigy. And it's just her life, and she has a very complicated life as well as being a chess champion, and it kind of shows how her brain works. And if you've ever seen someone that good at chess, you know why it's so impressive, as well as, you know, how it can cause other factors of your life to spiral. So I definitely recommend Queen's Gambit on Netflix.
Hey, so did they imply what I think they implied in Mandalorian?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. They sure did. That's all I'm going to say. So you guys.
Okay.
Hit us up on social medias if you think you know what we're talking about. At @RJohnDraws and @AaronSmirks or @BuyPopcorn, either one. Okay, and in closing, I have the Ho Teachable Minute. Basically, what that means is in a minute or less, I try to talk about something I learned on film or television over the past week. So this past week, I watched the film The Perfect Weapon. It's on HBO and HBO Max, and we even have an interview with the director of the film, John Maggio, on our podcast feed or at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Definitely check that out. The Perfect Weapon is a documentary on cyber terrorism and the escalating nature of those attacks. One aspect to this documentary resides in Russia and China's focus on perception hacks. That means they have data farms where hackers' sole job is to create profiles, articles, and disinformation to be spread throughout our country and our world on both sides of every major issue. Climate change, Black Lives Matter, COVID-19, everything, and further push the divide between us all. What I want to say is please take a minute. The next time you think about sharing that article, do some research, find out if it's accurate and not just what you hope is true. Take a breath before you argue with a random person on the internet. Take a step back from social media as a whole and see if there's something more constructive you can do with your time. We can all do with our time. Just not this podcast. Keep coming back for this. And lastly, this is just on a personal note. No matter who wins the U.S. presidential election, you might know by the time you listen to this, you might not. I've definitely learned that we are all in this together. And no matter how much you think you can do this thing called life without the other side, I promise you cannot. We need each other. All disagreements aside, and this toxic divide has to stop somewhere. Not in 4 weeks, months, or even 4 years, right now, we need to all be the people we know ourselves to be with healthy, positive, and constructive debate, not with yelling and torches in the streets. It's time to put the partisanship behind us and move past it. We have a chance right now, an opportunity, if you will. And I just hope that today, you listening to this, know that we can finally celebrate our Independence Day. Take care of each other, and obviously, buy popcorn.